generally, and within the Vajrayana teachings, there are many different types of instruction. There are the words of the Buddha, the treatises, and the fifth instructions. Among these three, the teachings of the Buddha, the words of the Buddha, were aimed at of being adopted to different types of people, so that the Buddha taught in different ways. Some teachings were expedient, the expedient meaning, some the definitive meaning, and so forth. And when it comes to applying these teachings to oneself, then it is much more practical to follow the treatises, because in the treatises, the different levels of, and the aspects of the Buddha's teachings were clearly defined and separated. So, of course, the Buddha's words are the most important, but when it comes to personal practice, the treatises are more important. Compared to the treatises, which through reasoning and quotations from the Buddha's words clearly establish the meaning of the Buddha's words, then they are more important than the Buddha's words themselves. But compared to the treatises, which uses a lot of logic and reasoning, then the fifth instructions, the Dhamma, are phrased in a way that can be directly applied by oneself. And for that reason, then the fifth instructions are even more important. Of these fifth instructions, eight types leads to Tibet. And they're called the eight great chariots of the practice lineage. And all these eight great chariots of the practice lineage teach different types of fifth instructions, each set of which is complete in itself. So that if we follow just one of these eight chariots, that itself will be sufficient to attain complete Buddhahood. But in order to avoid these lineages to die out, Jambun Kongtrul Lodajai, he collected the most important of these fifth instructions into one collection called the Dhammatsu, the treasury of moral instructions. And this is what will be given here.
Then,
Within the Dhammakata, the treasury of all instructions, there are different sets of teachings, and the way Jhampu Khonsu himself arranged the eight great chariots of the practice lineages, he starts out with the Nyingma, then is followed by Kadamba, then Sakya, then Kagyu, and so forth. Jhampu Khonsu Lodachai first passed on the transmission of these teachings to the 15th Karmapa Kakyab Dorjin and also to Jambun Sidharamuti Dhimma Wangshu Gyalpo, who later transmitted the teachings to the 16th Karmapa Rangjung Trimpa Dorjin. And the way in which he did this was that they started with the Kadampa teachings. The reason is that through these teachings one lays the foundation of the bodhicitta, and the Jhampu Rinpoche, he gave the Nyingma teachings, the Dzogchen teachings at the end as the last part of the transmission. And since Rinpoche is a follower of this tradition, then he will pass on the transmission in exactly the same way, same sequence. Jhampu Khonsu Rinpoche, he followed a system by the great master Gesen Taranata, who composed a scripture of 108 essential instructions. And within these 108 great instructions of the Taranata, short, very concise pieces of practical advice. The first one of these is called Shenpa Shidral, parting from the four attachments, which were received by Shakya Pandita in a vision of Manjushri. So that is the first teaching to be given. This teaching is then followed by the mind training according to the Kadam tradition of Atisha. And the mind training tradition is focused on the development of bodhicitta, of which there are two styles, two approaches. One is called the tradition of the profound view, and the other the tradition of the vast, extensive conduct, the two types, two ways of developing bodhicitta. These two styles of transmission of bodhicitta, the advices on how to generate bodhicitta, were given by the Buddha Shakyamuni. The one, which is called the transmission of the profound view, was passed through Manjushri to Nagarjuna and so forth. The other one, which is called the transmission of the extensive or vast conduct, passed from Buddha Shakyamuni to his regent Maitreya and on to Asanga and so forth. And among these two, Rinpoche here will explain how to generate bodhicitta in accordance with the transmission of the profound view. The way of generating bodhicitta has three parts: preparation, main part, and conclusion. Within the preparation, one begins with the seven branches, including paying homage, making offerings, confessing misdeeds, rejoicing, and so forth, requesting to turn the wheel of Dharma.
Tene ta te je sala tene chonti senti ke tamba te nu so lemba la ni te ya tene no ta ta chu ke na ki pa sonti pa chu ke na yo yo samba te ta tene te nda na ta ngo ta na rang ke chonti ngin bo na chi je pa chu ja chu ngo wa yin samba te ta tene te je sala te ta ne je sa je chu chu sen ba chonti ki
The main part involves the advice in how to develop the bodhicitta, the enlightened attitude. And the way to do this is that we should imagine that before us in the sky is a vast assembly of all the Buddhas of the three times and the ten directions. And it is in their presence that we first take refuge in the three jewels, the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. And after that, form the resolve that just as all the Buddhas of the past generated the mind set upon supreme enlightenment, also I, for the sake of all sentient beings, will generate the mind set upon supreme enlightenment in exactly the same way. Moreover, just as all the Buddhas of the past, after having developed the bodhicitta, carried out the activities of the 10 paramitas in order to benefit all sentient beings, also I will carry out and engage myself in the activity of the 10 paramitas in order to benefit all sentient beings in that exactly same way. That is how we should form the resolve. The way in which we train in bodhicitta and take the vow is basically out of devotion, out of respect, and out of the good intention. And we may wonder about what will happen after having taken a bodhisattva vow. Won't there come a time when we kind of lose it in some situations? And if we damage and lose our bodhisattva attitude, won't that be really risky and dangerous for us? And the Buddha says, no, it won't. It's not such a serious thing, because the bodhisattva vow is mental as opposed to the other vows which are physical or verbal, and we don't have full control over our mental state or our mind. We know this from, even though we intend not to be angry, involuntarily still we do get angry from time to time, powerlessly. And at that point, is there such a great risk that if we break the bodhisattva vow we go straight to hell? Then the Buddha says, no, there isn't. It's not like that. On the contrary, it is something that can be repaired. The bodhisattva vow is something to be taken again and again, training one's mind in that attitude. And every time it gets damaged, we simply repair it, retake it, and then when it gets damaged again, we retake it again, so that slowly and gradually then the faults that arise in our minds become less and less, and the qualities that are included within bodhicitta increase further and further.
Teacher, na, the new, the same, na, Langawa, the same, 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 the same
after having taken the Bodhisattva vow, we need to ensure that the virtue of that is multiplied, increased, and become inexhaustible until the final attainment of complete Buddhahood. And one way to do that is by rejoicing, acknowledging the incredible great fortune of having formed the resolve of bodhicitta. And unless we really acknowledge this great fortune and rejoice in it, it won't increase so easily. So that's why the concluding activity of having taken the Bodhisattva vow is to rejoice both on behalf of oneself and of others. And why is this? It is because of understanding that the main reason why we continue in samsara and why we undergo the tremendous amount of misery and pain in samsara existence is because of having failed to form the bodhisattva or bodhicitta resolve in the past, and therefore having avoided or refrained from engaging in the bodhisattva activities. But now, through taking the bodhisattva vow today, we should think like this. I'm now installed with the fortune to become a fully and truly enlightened Buddha and endowed with the ability to dispel all the sufferings of samsara existence. That is an immense, great fortune, so we should rejoice in that. That was on behalf of oneself. For on the behalf of others, we should understand that just like ourselves, everyone else wish to be happy and free from suffering. But unless other beings have a guide to show the way how to be free from the suffering, how to achieve happiness, they won't know it just by themselves. Other beings do need a guide, a helper, a teacher. So understanding that through developing bodhicitta, we will become at some point a fully enlightened Buddha. And at that point, until and as long as samsara lasts, until it's fully emptied, then we will act as the teacher, the guide, the defender of all sentient beings, helping them to dispel suffering. So, rejoicing also in the behalf of, on the behalf of all other beings, we can acknowledge the benefit of bodhicitta.
Kadampa
Within the Kadam tradition, brought to Tibet by Chishan, there are three different aspects. One is called the Kadam tradition of authoritative scriptures. One is called the Kadam tradition of the oral advice. And the third is called the Kadam tradition of the pith instructions. The first one of authoritative scriptures involves the teachings on the Majjhimika and Vinaya, the Abhidhamma and so forth, the sutras. And it's mainly based on studying the scriptures, the authoritative scriptures. The second style, which is the Kadam tradition of the oral advice, there are the teachings mainly on how to practically develop shamatha and vipassana, how to reflect on impermanence, how to develop bodhicitta, and the general mind training, and so forth. But in both of these, the tradition of authoritative scriptures and of oral advice, there are no empowerments. When the teacher came to Tibet, some people who had who were fortunate enough or ready enough to receive the Vajrayana teachings, a teacher also gave the empowerment, which today are known as the four deities of the Kadam tradition and also the 16 Bindus and others. Among these, Shrimati today will give the empowerment for the 16 Bindus of the Kadam tradition. In these 16 bindus or spheres, there are first one deity, and in the heart center of that deity, there is a sphere, within which there is another deity, and within the heart center of that other deity, there is a sphere, with a third deity, and within the heart center of that, there is another deity, and so forth. That's the principle of visualizing it, but in short, in brief, the main deity, the first one, is the 11-faced Avalokiteshvara. The way to practice this is by imagining ourselves, meaning the self-visualization, in the form of the 11th phase of Avalokiteshvara, but also in front of us, there is a deity which is called the front visualization, also 11th phase of Avalokiteshvara, and that is the one from which we receive empowerments and blessings. This 11th phase Avalokiteshvara with 1,000 arms and 1,000 eyes, the basic or primary face is white, the color of the body is white, and the faces to the right is red, the one to the green, to the left is green.
Then that data in the layer shall sum you on the lot, and it shall sum the Uji shall the younger than Yasuk shall the carbon, Yasuk shall the marble.
Then above these three faces are another three, of which the central one is the the central one is green, the right one is white, and the left one is red.
Tene ta thela ya pi ta into tene ta thel som ye ba de uchi cha de marpo ye de jong ko ye de ta.
Above those, there are again three, of which the central one is red, the right is the green, and the left is white.
Tene ta thi ta into la chu cha na.
Then above that, there is one wrathful black head.
And on top
of which bears the red face of Buddha Amitabha, signifying the Lord of the Family. When we train in bodhicitta, we take the vow, we keep it, but then it happens that we lose it. But that is not such a great danger or risk. We can retake it, we can repair it again. And for the practice of this, then the 11-faced Avalokiteshvara is extremely important, very beneficial. Avalokiteshvara in the past aeon took the vow that I will accomplish the welfare of all sentient beings without exception. And if I fail, if I break my vow, may my body split into 1,000 pieces. And Avalokiteshvara, he practiced and tried to benefit all sentient beings, to empty all the realms of samsara. But when he looked again to see whether he had been successful or not, it seemed like samsara was again full of sentient beings in all the different realms. So then he thought, this is impossible. Oh, this is I can't do this. It seems like samsara will never be emptied. There are not a single sentient being less than before. My efforts seem to be futile. And because of thinking like this, his vow was broken. And because of his past vow, a promise that made his body break into 1,000 parts, then it did split into 1,000 fragments. But due to the power of his wisdom and great qualities, then again it formed together in a form that has 11 faces and 1,000 arms in each with an eye, so 1,000 eyes.
Yeah, that's good. 되네.
네. 아, 대다도 중앙이 됐나. 네, 저동대 콜리지가 동동. 인동대 가가선 무슨게 동동 막 좋네. 인생이 대제가 됐나. 네, 바바티리 세티 가가선 무슨게 동동 오다. 됐나. 가던 길이 뚫리다. 내가 쏘다.
His 1,000 arms, he magically transforms into the 1,000 universal rulers of this excellent inn. And the eye in each palm of his hands, he magically transforms into the 1,000 Buddhas of this inn. In this way, because the 11-faced Avalokiteshvara is the very essence or heart of the 1,000 Buddhas of this kalpa, then he is also the first of the 16
Ages
Although there are 16 deities among these 16 spheres of the Kadam tradition, Rinpoche thinks it's sufficient or more important to just visualize Avalokiteshvara and make supplications to him. That's it for today.
Sipadan Zolayan Dhova Dhova